Tales Season 6.
Sonic Tales.
Sonic Tales Season 6.
Our picks.
Our picks.
Sonic Tales Season 6. Our picks.
It's going to be really exciting because you've got a chance, if you missed them the first time around, to listen to some of our very best plays.
Join us as we share some of our favourite original radio plays produced right here at Eastside Radio.
Our picks.
Our picks.
Our picks.
Hi there and welcome to Sonic Tales. My name's Tegan Nichols, I'm your host, and I am once again thrilled to have you join me for another episode when we bring you another original radio play, produced right here at Eastside Radio. I'm thrilled to announce that we are marking the beginning of Season 6, and we at Sonic Tales are so excited to be embarking upon a sixth season that we've decided to theme this season as Our Picks. That's right, the team here at Sonic Tales has handpicked our favourite plays that we have broadcast in the past, in our past seasons, and some of our favourite plays that we have produced and have yet to broadcast, that means brand new plays. Tonight's episode kicks off with our captain's pick. Our producer here at Sonic Tales, Jill Folsom, has chosen Pulpit Rock, a play written by Gina Sheen and performed by Elaine Hudson, with a particularly noteworthy sound design by Jacqueline Labrador. We'll be broadcasting Pulpit Rock later in the episode, but first I catch up with Jill to discuss why Pulpit Rock was her favourite pick.
Gina sent me the script of Pulpit Rock, and of course I loved it. And the actor that she wanted to record this was Elaine Hudson, who we also knew from New Theatre. So it was a bit of a family thing, actually. And so I suggested that Gina direct it herself, which she did. Hardly anything had to be said. Elaine did such a wonderful job. And then a young lady called Jacqueline Labrador, who had first come up with the Sonic Tales name at Eastside, she was working here as a volunteer, and she did the soundtrack, which is really remarkable. She was just at university at the time. I think she was in about 19, I think, unexperienced, and just gave it her all. And the day I listened to it on air at home alone, I cried a little bit. I didn't think that we would have been able to produce something as good as that. It was just highly professional in every way.
Can you tell us about Pulpit Rock?
No. You have to listen to it. It's too good a play. It's about an accident. It starts out with an accident. And no, I'm not going to tell you about it because you just have to listen to it. It's so good. But as soon as the sound effects start and the big crash that happens at the beginning, the story tells itself brilliantly.
It was the crash that woke me. We'd had dinner about an hour before and a lot of people were nodding off. Obviously the driver was too, because the bus had gone on to the other side of the highway and crashed head-on into a car. There was a long silence, and when I looked around, I saw bodies everywhere. Blood everywhere. The two nice Swedish women were... well... let's just say people aren't as tightly joined as they think.
I was listening to Pulpit Rock just before we met today. And one thing that really stood out to me was the pacing. I mean, we can maybe reveal that it is a bit of a thriller, you'd say. It's a thriller.
Absolutely.
It's quite suspenseful. There is Jacqueline Labrador and her work on the soundscape. She's really succeeded at achieving tension throughout the entirety of the play. So 23 minutes, it's almost a continuous soundscape, but it's not obtrusive, and it just hangs. The whole play just hangs in the air for all of that time. And then Elaine Hudson Her performance is really paced.
It's critical to that tension, isn't it? Mm.
It's the space in her performance,
yes,
is almost as loud as,
yes,
the spoken parts of her performance.
Yes, I do consider the fact that she has performed it to an audience, and she's also a great actress. Mm. Elaine is one of our very best actresses, which perhaps not everybody knows about, but we've got quite a lot of actresses in Australia that don't get to the big time. She's done things with the Sydney Theatre Company. She's played the lead in several things there, but she hasn't chased that, and she does a lot of work with local theatre and for charities and things. She's wondrous. She really is.
It's winter now. Dead leaves everywhere, but I can't feel the cold. I can't even smell the air. I don't know why we're here. Frank and I have never spent so much time together. The woman said, "You'll hear from us. Just stay in the allotted places and watch and wait." By the time Frank asked, "Watch what?" she'd gone.
And the time has come for our feature presentation. We here at Sonic Tales are very proud to present to you the first of our picks for Season 6, Pulpit Rock. Pulpit Rock, written by Gina Sheen, performed by Elaine Hudson.
It was the crash that woke me. We'd had dinner about an hour before and a lot of people were nodding off. Obviously the driver was too, because the bus had gone on to the other side of the highway and crashed head-on into a car. There was a long silence, and when I looked around, I saw bodies everywhere. Blood everywhere. The two nice Swedish women were... well, let's just say people aren't as tightly joined as they think. And the man from Perth and his wife. What was her name? Janet. She had a headache at the cafe and I gave her an aspirin. They weren't anywhere near where they'd been sitting. They were lying in the aisle. But Frank was still next to me, perched there on his seat next to the window. Perfectly all right. He looked at me in the middle of all the blood and twisted seats and said, "That was lucky." We climbed out through the windscreen and onto the road. Ambulance men were lifting out bodies and putting them on the ground. The car was totally crushed, and I could see our bus driver lying a little way ahead on the road. He must have gone through the glass. There were two other bodies near him. I walked over to get a closer look. It was a woman and a man. His head was just gruesome, and there was blood and dirt all over his face. He was wearing Frank's jacket. That was a bit odd. Then I looked at his face. Really looked at it. It was Frank. And then I looked at the woman again. It was me. It was me. I had long cuts on my arms and all over my chest. A policeman was coming over with two blankets and I touched his arm. I said, "Excuse me? I think there's been some sort of mistake." But he bent over the two people, over Frank and me, and covered us up. I stood there and watched us. Everything blacked out, but when I could see again, there we all were. The two Swedish girls, Janet and her husband, the bus driver, me and Frank, and a woman who kept asking if we could hear her and if we were comfortable. Not a scratch on anyone. Frank said, "Forget comfortable, just tell us if we're alive." The woman started talking about rules. "We can't eat now. We can't drink. We can't wash." Eventually, after Frank asked three times, she said, "No, I'm sorry, Frank. You're not alive anymore." That didn't shut him up, of course. He wanted to know how she knew his name, where we were, who she was. She said, "If I tell you, you won't believe me." He said, "Try me." She said, "God." He said, "You're right. I don't." We're in the Blue Mountains, in Anna and Liam's house, our good friends. We used to come here with our daughter every year. It was the one time when everyone got what they wanted. Frank got to flirt with Anna. Our daughter Susan played with their daughter Helen. And their son Tim locked himself in his room all day. I'd go for long walks on my own through the bush, or down to the shops for a hot chocolate. And I breathed in the lovely air. Liam went with me, if I asked him. I asked him a lot. We sat in cafes all afternoon, not really saying anything, pretending we were married. Well, that's what I was doing. I don't know what he thought. A waitress once said to me, "Would you and your husband like anything else?" It was one of the best moments of my life. It's winter now. Dead leaves everywhere, but I can't feel the cold. I can't even smell the air. I don't know why we're here. Frank and I have never spent so much time together. The woman said, "You'll hear from us. Just stay in the allotted places and watch and wait." By the time Frank asked, "Watch what?" she'd gone. I sit on the veranda and Frank just walks up and down, up and down. This morning he said, "Those kids have let this place go to rack and ruin. No one's lifted a finger here since Liam was killed." Anna had already divorced Liam when the accident happened. She was up north somewhere, so it was Helen who told us. Liam went for a walk to Pulpit Rock with Tim and fell off the escarpment. Tim didn't go to the funeral. He was so upset. Fancy losing your father like that. Over a cliff. Susan and Helen are here. They drove up today. Susan looks terrible. I don't think she's slept. They can't see us, of course. They talked about the accident and the funeral. Our funerals. And who went and the music and whether we'd have liked it. Frank sat in a corner of the lounge room, as though it was all television. He was going to slam a few doors to keep them amused. I said, "Frank, for God's sake, they'll die of fright." which set him off all over again. He thinks the whole thing's hilarious. Susan was crying tonight at the table. She pushed back her plate and bawled. I wanted to bundle her up in my arms. Dry your eyes, Susie. Mum's here. Frank gave me one of his looks.
Susie? You never called her Susie in your life, he said.
Susan's still seeing Tim, apparently. Helen's not thrilled about it, but she and Tim were never close. He's driving up for a reading in Katoomba. He's working on his third thriller. It's called A Lethal Course. It's about golf players. I suppose someone gets murdered in it. I watched Susan sleeping tonight. If I touched her, what would happen?
The rules are there for a reason, Frank said. Imagine if you woke up one morning and saw your dead mother standing by the bed. Would you want to talk to her?
Well, actually, yes, I would. Tim's here. He came up from Sydney with his computer and golf clubs and all sorts of stuff. Susan's running around, very excited. But Helen's gone quiet. She didn't even say hello when he arrived. She just stayed out on the back veranda. They've gone up to the shops. Frank went with them, just to get out of the house. He said he'd sit in the back of the car. I said, "We're meant to stay here." And what if they pick up a hitchhiker? Are you going to sit on the roof? He said, "It's a huge bloody car, Jean. He's rich, remember?" Frank's crazy about Tim. Tim's a real go-getter, he said. He likes that. I waved goodbye from the window. I have no idea why. It's not like they could see me. There was a man in the garden, looking right at me and smiling. Liam. It was Liam, and he could see me. He came inside, and like a fool, I said, "You're looking well." As if he'd been on a holiday. But he laughed and said, "Thank you, Jean. I feel terrific." The thing is, he was looking well. His coat was filthy. I don't know why we aren't allowed to wash, but he didn't have his usual beaten-by-life look. Death seems to agree with him. It really does. His eyes were shining. "Can we walk?" I said. "Can we walk somewhere?" "Best not to," he said. "Not yet." So we sat on the couch and looked at each other. "In livelier times, I would have made tea," I said. But Liam didn't even smile. He said, "There's more to a good afterlife than tea, Jean. You wait. There are truly wonderful things in store." He was like a salesman. "Well, that's lovely. When does it all start?" "Well, the thing is," he said, "the committee's not quite sure whether..." "Whether?" I said. "I'm sorry," Liam said, "but they're finding it hard to see you."
"See me?"
"To see who you are. Questions have come up about whether you ever followed your true nature. You know, your heart." "My heart? I thought God could see that. Anyway, I like to think that I've always been considerate, which must count somewhere." "You're allowed to take one definite action," Liam said. "That'll be enough." He said he had to choose an action as well. I asked him what it was. "Let's just say," he said, "it's more what I didn't choose." Then he stood up and said, I'm sure we'll see you soon, Jean. Just listen to your inner voice. That's your best guide. Bring out the things that are buried, but don't talk to Frank about it. This has to be you alone. I didn't tell him that I bury everything. What I did say was, "Will you come and get me, Liam?" He said, "If all goes well, then yes, it'll be me." He turned to go, and I saw two prints on the back of his coat. Two big hand prints. Maybe I shouldn't have, but I thought, well, damn it. Ask questions. Start that action, Jean. So I asked him, and all the light went out of him. "It's where Tim pushed me," he said. "It's where Tim pushed me off the escarpment." I grabbed his hand. "Liam!" But he was halfway through the wall. He was fading through it somehow, like water when it sits on paper and then the paper gives in and lets it through. I tried to follow him. How does someone like you end up with a son like that? But the wall didn't give in to me, and he'd gone. I rushed to the window. I leaned out and shouted at the fir trees and the woodpile and the dried-up moss garden, like a madwoman. I didn't care if anyone heard. I yelled out, "Why doesn't Tim get punished?" And now I'm full of questions. Oh, yes, I have a list. Questions from all the quiet, timid people who don't act, who rein themselves in. We miss out on the job. We lose our lover to someone else, pushed to the back of the queue, pushed over the edge, not a whimper out of us. Why? Because God will reward our decency and love our goodness. But by now we're so small, not even God can see us. I went to Tim's reading in Katoomba, a work in progress. He reads well, actually. All about a woman called Delia who gets walloped over the head by a golf club. Frank's happy I'm taking an interest in Tim's work. He still thinks he's the best thing since sliced bread. Good thing he didn't hear Tim call him a boring old fart yesterday. Susan defended him mightily. "My father was terrific," she said. "He was a great dad." Meanwhile, Frank was in the bathroom, watching Helen in the shower. Tonight, Tim was talking to Susan about the agony of losing a parent. He told her how he understood her pain. Then he said, "Who do you miss most, your mother or your father?" And she answered, quick as a flash, didn't even think about it. She said, "My dad. Mum and I were never that close." Tim said, "She was a real doormat, your mum." Susan just nodded. She didn't say, "She was a great mum." Was I a bad mother? Was I? I went into the lounge room. Helen had the TV on. I sat down on the hard chair. I didn't want to risk the rocker. And there we were, the three of us, the great dad, the best friend, and the doormat. I wanted to get up and open the door, to walk and walk and walk. What was Liam doing? What wonderful thing in the afterlife? I have so much to say to him now. There's so much unburying to do. Frank looked across at me. "Can you stop that bloody sighing, Jean? If you're bored, walk around the house for a bit." I think Frank's been talking to someone. He sits in the garden, doesn't say a word. He was still out there when it started snowing. He looked like a ghost when I went to get him. I snuck the back door open and told him to come in out of the cold. He didn't even say, "Don't be so stupid, Jean." He just sat there. Something's going on. Helen's gone back to Sydney. Tim said now he could get down to some real work. Helen said to Susan, "If you need anything, just ring me. Anything." I never said that to Susan. I never said, if you need anything, ring me. Why couldn't he work with Helen around? Frank and I were sitting on the veranda last night. He reached over and took my hand. He hasn't done that for years. I looked down, just for a moment, and when I looked up again, he'd gone. They say just act from the heart. The heart? My heart is full of terror. How do I act from that? Why does Frank go? What was his action? Having an affair with Anna? Watching a girl take a shower? Where does he get to leave and I'm here with... I didn't drown Susan in affection, but surely she knows I loved her. The three of us now. The doormat, the daughter and the killer. She beat him at cards this morning and he threw a cup at her. What'll he do next? She spent the afternoon on the veranda under a blanket. She's getting a cold too, and no wonder. I snuck through the door to sit with her. It was time that she and I had a little talk. So I made up a rule. If she sneezed, it meant yes, she agreed with what I was saying. No sneeze meant she didn't. I sat down next to her. I wanted to inhale her, and so I got down close to her hair. But there was no smell at all. I said, now you just listen to me. Tim is a selfish, evil man. She sneezed. I'm in a position now where I can help you, I said. But just then Tim came outside. Hey, let's go for a bushwalk tomorrow, he said. Just to Pulpit Rock. Then we'll go and have lunch somewhere. She said, all right, if you want. I stood up. I was shaking, but I never felt more alive. I know you think I never did anything for you, but you just watch, I said to her. You just watch me be your mother now. There was blood everywhere, on his manuscript, all over the table, and so much of it. But I feel so good, such a good act. My hand gripping something solid again. I could have laughed with the joy of it. I feel like my body's been rinsed clean. Susan was still outside. I made sure she didn't hear anything, and I buried the golf club under the house. She's upset, but she'll be all right. She's safe now. They found the golf club. Their dogs went straight to it. They took Susan away to help with their inquiries. She already told them she didn't hear anything, but they're a stubborn lot, these policemen, and so insensitive. She's crying as though her heart would break and not a kind word from any of them. When she gets back, I'm not letting her out of my sight, rules or no rules. Except I can't seem to open the doors anymore, front or back. I did the right thing. They'll know that. I wish I could wash this blood off. We must be able to clean up later. I'll check with Liam when he comes back. I hope I can get that door open when he does. Otherwise, I'll look like a real fool.
Pulpit Rock was written by Gina Sheen, performed by Elaine Hudson, sound design by Jacqueline Labrador, and produced for Eastside Radio by Jill Folsom. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Sonic Tales. If you happen to have missed any of this episode or would like to listen again, please visit our website, eastsidefm.org/sonictales, and you can listen to podcasts from this episode as well as all of our previous episodes online. We are also available through iTunes. Simply subscribe to Sonic Tales. I'd like to thank our producer, Jill Folsom, for coming on the show today, and of course to Gina Sheen for sharing her wonderful work with our project. Join us next time as we continue to share with you our favourite picks of past and present. My name is Tegan Nichols, and until then, take care and good night.